Jared Maverick Perry hiked the Pacific Crest Trail that runs between Canada and Mexico, and the Continental Divide Trail that runs between Mexico and Canada. And that hike leads us to ask, what does one eat while walking back and forth across America?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1080th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on the GCN Radio Network, or perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Montevideo, who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason.
It's my pleasure, sir.
Now, have you ever taken a long walk?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
How long?
Oh, man, too long.
I remember once in Boy Scouts hiking 25 miles.
Yikes. Yep, that's a doozy.
Listen to this, okay? Folks, the Pacific Crest Trail follows the crest of the Sierra Nevada and Cascade Mountain ranges for 2,659 miles from Mexico to Canada through California, Oregon, and Washington. The Continental Divide Trail follows the crest of the Rocky Mountains for 3,100 miles from Canada to Mexico through Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico. When the trails are strung together, they offer a 5,759-mile walk. And that is like walking across America from sea to shining sea and halfway back again. But wait, these trails follow the crests of America's most spectacular mountain ranges, which means one must hike up one side of a mountain and down the other for 5,759 miles. And to walk the walk, one has to carry food, water, camping gear. The Jared Maverick Perry walk this walk leads us to ask, what does one eat while walking back and forth across America? Well, here to help us talk the walk, we have the Maverick himself, Jared Perry. Jared, welcome aboard.
Hey, Mike.
Pretty cool thing, huh? Walking all the way. Also with us today, we have my friend Brian Mathias, who's going to be our co-host today, and he said, called me up one day and he said, Michael, you got to do this show. This is really good stuff. What's good about it, Brian?
Jared just is a local source of a lot of great stories from having done these two amazing trips. He's my good friend, and I just wanted to get him up here to share his story with the rest of Santa Cruz.
So we're going to have some fun, not just Santa Cruz, you know. There's like the whole country listening.
The whole country. Then.
Okay, there you go. So, okay, pure envy. That's me.
Okay.
I've always wanted to hike that hike and just never got around to it. So that's me. I'm just pure envy. Gosh, is there anybody else envious of what you have done, which is walk both trails?
I have talked to a lot of people that wish they could have done it, but, you know, it's hard to find the time to take off.
Uh-huh. How much time?
Well, safely estimating probably 6 months for either the Pacific Crest Trail or the Continental Divide. You could do it quicker than that, but, you know, safely 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah.
Wow. So, a year.
Pretty much.
A year of walking.
Span together. Yeah, the two trails.
Wow. So, one morning you woke up and said, I'm going to walk the walk. And everybody around you said, good luck, have come to the conclusion that you had to make these walks.
Well, it actually all started with my father. He was kind of the catalyst of this whole long-distance hiking venture. Mm-hmm. It has always been his dream to hike the Pacific Crest Trail or parts of it. And in 2012, when he expressed his desire to do that, you know, he had retired recently. I was in the construction industry, and I was able to get the time off. So the more research he did and the more training he did and thought he put into it, the more I thought, you know, I should really get on board with this, not just for the adventure for myself, but also, you know, to spend the time with him would be something amazing.
You know, this is really interesting because it's not a commercial venture, is it?
No.
This is more, it's like the difference between farming and gardening. So you're kind of like, this isn't something I'm going to do for the fun of it.
Yeah.
For the adventure.
Fun, for the challenge, mm-hmm. for the adventure. Yeah.
Wow. And so did you and your father go on that first hike together?
We did, and we completed the entire Pacific Crest Trail together.
Did you do it all in one lump?
We did. We did it in 2013.
Wow. There you go. And then you decided what? That was so much fun.
Well, we had, after the Pacific Crest Trail, you know, we did have a lot of fun. And we got along really well, even being father and son. Some people couldn't believe it, but it just worked for us. We had talked about doing another trail after that. Didn't put a time frame on it or anything. And when 2015 rolled around, we started talking about it, and timing just seemed like, you know, it was pointing us in that direction. I was able to get time off work. He was at the gym training, and we figured kind of why not go for another trail. I mean, you know, we had a good time last time, so it's going to be another father-son adventure.
So you did father-son again?
We did, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's an incredible adventure for a father and a son. And did you grow together, or did you get into fights all the time?
Oh, yeah. I would say we grew together. Mm-hmm. I got to know all his little intricacies, you know, what...
Oh, yeah, I would suspect so.
Yeah, yeah. Any kind of noise he would make, either it be like a throat clearing or like a sigh. I knew what all those little sounds meant, and I knew how to, adjust to them and react to them mm-hmm. over time.
So over the course of a year, a full year together on the trail.
Well, it would have been a full year for him and I in the backcountry together, except the Continental Divide, he made it about 1,000 miles with me before throwing in the towel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a good move on his part. The altitude was affecting him. He was homesick. My mother had just retired, and I think that played a big part of his homesickness.
Sure.
So, yeah, it was a good decision on his part.
Okay. Well, fair enough. You know, and thinking about this, I wonder what your community thought when you became involved in all of this. So your friends, your those around you.
They were excited. You know, even the boss I had at the time was really excited. I told him I wanted to do this, and he said, okay, you know, take the time off work, go for it. You have a job when you get back. He was very supportive.
You know, something similar happened to myself and my wife when we were kids. We went back to Montana to visit everybody, and we visited a friend's father who had just floated the Missouri River through the Missouri Breaks, and it was the most spectacular thing I've ever seen. So we decided right there and there on the spot to do it, and we told everybody around us that we're going to do it. And instead of expressing, you know, like, oh, you're crazy kids, they all dug it to the extent that they gave us everything we needed to do this. And within 24 hours, we were on the road to the river. And it was like we were going to live something everybody else wanted to live around. Did you feel that too?
Yeah. You know, people rally around you and they get behind you because – in a way, they can kind of live vicariously through you.
Exactly. Here, take my canoe.
Yeah.
Here's my tent. Go ahead. You know, I'll give you a ride. You know, the whole clan got behind us and all of a sudden made it possible for us to live what they wanted to live. And so that's your job today, is to live that trail so that we can enjoy it with you. And that's going to be a lot of fun in my book. So, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. We're going to be talking, of course, about what the heck do you eat when you're on the trail for 5,759 miles, using your body extensively all the time, because those are not just flat miles.
No, they're very up and down.
Very up and down, right? Up one side of a mountain, down the other.
That's pretty much
5,759 miles. So, how do you eat? What do you eat? What kind of adventures do you find along the way? Who do you meet on the trail? What kind of weather do you have to contend with? All of those things. Oh, my goodness. What fun. So, stay tuned. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Hiker is Jared Maverick Perry. Going to learn how he got the name. Co-host Brian Mathias and you. Been on a hike? How far? 831-479-1080. Do stay tuned. We will be right back after these messages. And we are going to hike like you've never hiked before. Whew.
MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land. We can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5, 6, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
Get this. A long walk, 5,759 miles from Canada to Mexico and Mexico to Canada along the crests of America's most spectacular mountain ranges. That's the walk that hiker Jared Maverick Perry hiked. So, first of all, Maverick?
Yes.
Where'd Maverick come from?
Well, it's a tradition for long-distance backpackers to give each other nicknames and use those nicknames throughout the trail. I think it's just a camaraderie builder, and just it shows that you're a part of the team and accepted, and yeah.
So you're Maverick. Yeah.
I am Maverick, yes.
Then that's how people know you.
Yeah, I would say a lot of the hikers don't even know my real name.
Wow. The trails. Which first, Pacific Crest or Continental Divide?
I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail first.
Mm-hmm. Why? Because it's closest?
Yeah, because it was closest. And we have a family cabin that's about 3 miles away from the Pacific Crest Trail in Chester, which is near Lake Almanor, northeastern California. And that's kind of what got my dad to think, oh, you know, this trail, what is it? He wanted to learn more about it, and the more research he did, he found out that people actually hike the whole thing continuously in 1 year. So that really drove him to, you know, explore what's possible. Yeah.
Are they actually trails?
The Pacific Crest Trail is a continuous trail from Mexico to Canada, unbroken.
Wow.
So, you know, you get specific maps, and you can get specific apps on your phone that will help you stay right on the actual Pacific Crest Trail.
Cool. And where do you charge your cell phone?
Well, I bring an extra little battery pack.
Oh.
Just in case of emergencies.
And then we're talking weight, aren't we?
Yeah, but it's minimal, but it's necessary. Just, you know, you wouldn't want your cell phone to die.
Brian?
Jared, how much stuff are you carrying? How much is all your gear when you weigh it?
Well, I got my base pack weight over time down to about 10 pounds total base pack weight. That includes, you know, my backpack, all my gear, everything excluding food and water.
Wow. So let's go back to the trail here. Top to bottom or bottom to top?
I went from Mexico to Canada.
Why?
Well, just going north seemed to make sense. You start out earlier in the year, and you're kind of walking with the sun.
Okay.
So
as the sun climbs in the sky.
As the sun gets higher. And you know, as you get further and further north, the sun is melting more and more of those high mountains. So it just kind of made sense logistically to start in the desert and then work your way towards the mountains as they're melting and then continue on.
Good. Tell us the difference now between hiking in California, Oregon, and Washington. You start in the desert in California.
Yeah, started in the desert in California, and I enjoyed it. You know, it's an experience. The sunsets and sunrises are amazing. Wide open country. And I think we went through about roughly 700 miles of desert.
Wow.
What they consider desert, which is a lot of the time like high chaparral kind of stuff.
How long were you hiking each day?
Well, first few days we would start out, you know, just under 20 miles a day, and we would work our way up on the Pacific Crest Trail to in between 25 and 30 miles a day. Of course, I upped that on the Colorado, you know, the Continental Divide Trail.
When did you pick up the mountains in California?
I picked up the mountains, 700 miles in is about where the Sierra Nevada Range, you know, started. And it's in this town, Kennedy Meadows, is kind of like the gateway into the Sierras. So you're walking through desert-like rocky terrain. It's all rocky for the most part.
Right.
But then you start noticing more granite, and the peaks get a little higher, and so you really realize you're getting into the mountains.
How high do you go?
On the Pacific Crest Trail, I actually summited, what's that peak? The highest peak in California, Mount Whitney, yeah. And that was a little side trip off the trail. But since I was
that would be like being a glutton for punishment, right?
Yeah, I was only a few miles away, so I figured why not bag it while I'm here. And that is roughly about 14,500 feet.
So up on the mountains, and it's mountains pretty much from there all the way due north, right?
It is. You get a little reprieve from the mountains in Oregon. You're walking through some woods, and the terrain, the grade is a little bit less than like going, you know, straight up and straight down. So it's a nice little break.
So are you like by Crater Lake? Do you walk by Crater Lake or any of that?
The trail goes right by Crater Lake. Uh-huh. Yeah, you walk the,
right on the rim there.
The rim of Crater Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it follows the crest of the mountains. So you're up and down all the time.
Yeah, for the most part.
Wow.
Jared, how frequently would you see other people on the trail, other backpackers?
The Pacific Crest Trail in 2013 was gaining a lot of popularity, partly due to Cheryl Strayed's book, Wild.
Mm-hmm.
And they did like a movie out of it with Reese Witherspoon. So that book came out, I think, the year prior, and it was rapidly gaining popularity after that. So I think about 900 people, if my memory serves me, attempted the trail that year in 2013.
Okay. And once you hit Washington, things start getting wet, don't they?
Yeah, they do, depending on what time of the year you get to Washington. Mm-hmm. I got there when it was rainy. I think it rained almost every single day in Washington that I was there.
Uh-huh. And did you start molding?
I got pretty soggy, and sometimes it was miserable, but in all honesty, you get used to it, and it doesn't seem as bad after a few weeks.
And you came out on top up in Canada, someplace.
Yes. Let's see, where did I end up? What park was that? Did I end up in Canada?
So is there an actual border there on the trail?
There's a border cut into the tree line. It's just this big open swath of forest, you know, like a road.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it for miles, this big open space cut right into the trees. And
you knew that was the border.
And you knew you were
getting close.
And there's also a monument, you know, a Pacific Crest Trail monument and a Continental Divide Trail monument at both ends of the border.
Okay, what did you do when you finished, what was the first thing you did?
When I got back to civilization, when I got to the war?
When you got to the nearest, like, bar and restaurant, bar and grill or something?
Well, I got into Canada, and there was a hotel there. And, you know, I really just wanted to relax. My dad and I were some of the first people to start the trail that year, so there wasn't
the first ones, yeah.
Yeah, so there wasn't... We weren't the first ones to finish, because there's some fast hikers that pass us. But we weren't in the big group.
Right.
So there was maybe two other hikers at the hotel we were at. And rest was a pretty big priority. Then hot tubs.
Did you you talk about hiking groups. Were some of the hikers in big groups?
Yeah, some of them were. Mm-hmm. And in general, if you start the trail by yourself, you don't end the trail by yourself. Just because of the nature of people like to group together and work
sure.
as a team.
Sure.
And it's safer that way.
So, well, take us to the Continental Divide Trail, which is a little bit different because you're in different states and you got different mountains. Oh, shucks. What's that? We can't talk about the Continental Divide Trail just yet, but we will when we come back. That's a 3,100-mile trail.
Yes, it is.
And you're going through, let's see, New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana.
Yep, right along the border of Idaho and Montana for a few hundred miles.
Right. And so you could look one way and see Idaho and look the other way and see Montana then.
A lot of the time, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and those are the big mountains, right?
Yeah, they are. You're up at a higher elevation in the Rockies than I was in the Sierras, definitely.
Okay. Well, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with hiker Jared Maverick Perry, co-host Brian Mathias, and you, 831-479-1080. Give us a ring. We are back. This time, we are back to the Continental Divide Trail, which runs, 3,100 miles from Mexico to Canada. And with hiker Jared Maverick Perry, also co-host Brian Mathias, talk a little bit about the difference between the two trails.
Well, the altitude, like you said earlier, is a big part. On the Sierra section of the Pacific Crest Trail, I got up to 10,000 feet and kind of floated between 10 and 9 for a while, more specifically on the John Muir section of that trail.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it. It was fun, you know. Didn't get too much altitude sickness.
Right.
In the Rockies, we got up to 10, 11, 12, 13,000 feet. And we're up there for a lot longer, and it was much more challenging. So getting back down to 10,000 feet felt just great, felt like a break.
Yeah. So when you're up that high, what is the weather like?
Because
you've got those winds, you know,
yes.
Kind of the winds are kind of like a they speed up like they do on an airfoil, like an airplane wing, you know. So when they go over the mountains, they go over really fast.
Yeah, especially I remember getting over some passes, finally getting into the saddle of a mountain where the wind's just funneled in there, and it feels like it's blowing 70 miles an hour, and it's actually hard to stand up because your backpack is like a little sail catching all that wind. And so it could be quite challenging.
And you got into some snow, I bet.
I did. I left the border of Mexico and New Mexico on April 7th. So that was about a month earlier
than most people. That's very early in the season. Yeah, that's very early in the season.
So I got into the snow in early May up in northern New Mexico. And I was, you know, approaching the San Juan Range in southern Colorado. And that was much more snow than I bargained for. I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. But I had to adjust my gear. Snowshoes were must. I believe it would have been impossible without them. Some more warm gear was also essential. And brushing up on my navigational skills and taking much more time to plan our routes was also important. Because we couldn't follow the trail.
Because it was under the snow.
It was all under the snow anyway. and it was just too dangerous. The Rockies was the only range that I've ever been in where avalanches were a real concern, mm-hmm. and I was nervous about that.
And you were in avalanche season, too.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. Woo! Tell people what it's like to hike in the snow.
Well, the first couple days, it's actually quite fun. But that feeling of, oh, man, I'm out here, I'm having a good adventure, it wears off pretty quickly after you're cold and, you know, your snowshoes are hurting your feet and, you know, it's just a struggle to get 10 miles a day. Like, 10 miles a day would be hiking, you know, 15 hours, just nonstop, basically, with minimal breaks.
Up and down, up and down.
Up and down, yeah. And then that...
Avalanche country.
In avalanche country, yeah. That, along with having to find your own routes and make very crucial decisions.
And about this time is when your father said, son, you're crazy.
Actually, we got through the entire San Juan Range. Mm-hmm. Together, and he called it quits actually when we were done with, I think, the hardest part of the trail.
Mm-hmm.
But by that time, he had lost a lot of weight. It would have been hard to regain that weight.
And which is something you need, you need to.
Yeah, definitely. If you get too skinny, you know, your energy level goes down and you don't have any more reserves to burn.
So did you go through the Wind River Range?
I did, in Wyoming.
Oh.
That was one of my highlights. I like that range a lot. That was where I got to fish, and, you know, after...
Weather moderated a little bit.
It did. And there was a few snow fields that I went over, even all the way up there. But you were above the tree line in that range, just wide open vistas, mm-hmm. really, really beautiful.
You need to get up in the Tetons?
I walked... I could see the Tetons. In that section, there was a fire that was, you know, clouding up the air. Oh. So, yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't get very good views of the Tetons.
Up in the Yellowstone?
Up in Yellowstone?
Were you in Yellowstone Park?
Oh, yeah. Like actually, this? The trail goes right through Yellowstone National Park.
Yeah, Continental Divide.
Did you ever encounter bears?
You know, very, very surprisingly, I didn't see a single bear, black bear, or grizzly the entire trail on the Continental Divide. I saw tracks, I saw scat, I saw scratch marks on trees.
Did you carry a noisemaker?
I didn't carry a noisemaker. Mm-hmm. I was a noisemaker. If I was by myself, I would mm-hmm. just talk to myself.
Sing songs.
Yeah, or just kind of make loud noises if I heard something up ahead. Just to, you know, let all of nature know that I was coming by.
Wow.
And I did carry bear mace with mm-hmm. me as well. As a precaution.
Yeah. You know what? How you can tell the difference between black bears and grizzlies?
Grizzlies are a lot bigger.
Yeah. It's that black bear scat has berries and stuff in it, and
uh-huh.
grizzly bear scat has cans of mace in it and stuff like that.
Yep.
Something like that, yeah. A lot different, those two. Well, okay, so, you know, I just picture you hiking through the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And think about the tremendous needs of your body.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my goodness. Your body's in terrific need of food all the time.
Yeah, and honestly, you can't eat enough to replenish the calories that you're burning. I mean, you could eat constantly all day, which is what I tried to do, as much as you could possibly, you know, mm-hmm. put in your stomach. And it's not enough. Your body's just burning it up because of the altitude, because of the cold, and because of your just physical
cold.
Exertion.
Yeah, cold and altitude. Ooh. I once had my brother-in-law lived in Cook City, Montana, and we went cross-country skiing there. And he treated us to a breakfast of bear steaks and French toast made with bear lard.
Okay.
And it lasted a whole day, you know. What did you eat?
Well,
that would last you, that would carry you.
Yeah. Olive oil was a staple in my diet.
Oh.
I would actually carry, you know, a bottle, like a 16-ounce bottle of olive oil. And sometimes I'd carry it right next to my water in my pack within reaching distance. And, just take swigs, little shots of olive oil along the way. And obviously you can't start out doing this, but over time you get your system used to digesting olive oil and just taking it straight, and you start to like it.
Sure. Well, you probably start to crave the fats.
You do. And it's, you know, it's the most efficient calorie source, oils, fats that you could carry. So it just makes sense to figure out what you like, be it olive oil, coconut oil, you know, even butter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson getting into the food here. We're hiking in some of North America's most spectacular country. It's snowing. It's cold. The wind is blowing. You're mushing through that slush, and you're soaked. And boy, are you ever hungry. What are you going to eat? Better have something. Right back. Okay, what on earth do you eat when walking 5,759 miles across America's mountains? Not only just mountains, but my God, the Sierra Nevada, the Cascade, the Rocky Mountains. Woo! Gets pretty hungry. Just talking off mic a little bit with our hiker, Jared Maverick Perry, talking a little bit about, you get to a point where, what happens?
Oh, well, you know, you get to a point in physical exertion where, you know, it's important to eat healthy in the real world, but really, you could just put anything in your system when you're out there, and it'll just burn it up. You know, your body uses every little bit of whatever you put in there, being, you know, if it's cookie dough or oil or candy, or not that that's what my diet was, mm-hmm. but I was talking
but
to you.
But you were talking about some of the hikers you met who were subsisting on candy.
They were. And part of that was because
I think, you know, when you mentioned that, I thought about hummingbirds living on sugar water, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they get big spikes in energy, but they also get, you know, the lows,
compensating too. Crash.
Yeah.
And how long does it take before that has an impact? Because you're on the walk for a solid year, you know, how long does it take before your body starts to have an adverse impact from the fact that you're simply not getting enough?
I would say it takes a month. After the first month of hiking, you know, 20 to 30 miles a day, and, you know, you've started losing a lot of the fat that maybe you had mm-hmm. before you started.
All of the stuff that you wanted to get rid of.
Exactly, yeah. You really start to notice it after the first month, I would say.
Brian?
What was in your regular diet when you're on the trail hiking all this time, all these miles? What were the things that you would regularly eat?
Well, I ate my own concoction of oatmeal, protein powder, mixed with nuts and raisins for breakfast. And I would actually, oftentimes, instead of reconstituting that with water, I'd just pour olive oil in there, mix it up, and eat it like some mm-hmm. goop.
So, you know, but in doing that, you got the fats.
Yeah.
That you're probably craving most of all.
Yeah, because that's what keeps the weight on. And mm-hmm. over time, you know, your body really learns to burn those fats efficiently, more efficient than carbohydrates.
Hmm.
And another benefit of carrying fats as opposed to carbohydrates as energy is the fats take less water to digest. So it just makes sense, you know, if you're carrying more fats, you have to carry less water. So, yeah.
What about food drops? Because if you're carrying a jug of olive oil, you're going to go through that in not too long.
Yeah, I would try and keep it down. My food resupplies to five days of food, and then I'd try and, you know, my itinerary, I would plan to get to like the nearest gas station or hitchhike into the nearest town and resupply. Any longer than 5 days, the weight starts getting pretty heavy. The longest I went was 7 days or maybe even eight. But I mean, if you're carrying 2 pounds a day of dense food, you know, that's 16 extra pounds on your back, eight days.
So it's not only weight, it's volume.
Yes. To keep you know, your base pack weight as light as possible. You carry a smaller backpack, all your gear is smaller, and you want your food to be dense and compact as well, because if it's light and airy, even if it's really calorie, you know, rich, you want to be able to fit it in your backpack.
Mm-hmm. What types of foods are fit in that category, that they're dense and calorie rich enough to bring on the trail with you?
Nuts is a, you know, that's a great one, obviously. I found my secret to upping the calorie in my dinners was I used a lot of almond meal. So it's just powdered almond that I picked up, I think, at Trader Joe's. And it has, you know, a high calorie, and it's really compactable. And you could mix it into almost any dinner. And surprisingly, you don't taste this almond meal in your dinner. You just benefit from the calories.
And so you're out there walking along in the slush and the cold and the wind and the freezing temperatures, and you're thinking about eating something. What is it that comes to mind when you're really hungry out there? What do you, I could sit down and eat this. What would it be?
For myself, most of the time it was hamburgers or cheeseburgers. That's what I would crave. For my dad, it was sometimes hamburgers, cheeseburgers, sometimes ice cream. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of hikers, pizza was something that they would just like fantasize about on the trail, you know?
Fats.
Yeah.
Fats and salts and all of the things that your body's really craving.
Yeah.
So what about the people you meet?
Well, the people you meet, the later you start, or the earlier you start in the year like I do, I'd say the less people you meet.
Right.
But the people you do meet, that makes it all the more special. You develop really good relationships, you know. And if you hike together with people, I mean, you pretty much, you're making friends for life.
How long do you hike with them before you go your separate ways? But how can you go your separate ways if you're all on the same trail and head the same direction? A question. Hold on.
Yeah.
This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, oh, man, so many miles left to hike and so few minutes to hike it in. What are we going to do? We are with hiker Jared Maverick Perry. That's what they call him out on the trail. Nobody even knows his real name. They just know him as the Maverick. Also with me, guest co-host Brian Mathias, and you. You ever been on a long march? Ooh, looks like Tony has. Right back. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. So much to talk about, so little time to talk about it. But hey, Tony has one very important question to ask the Maverick. What is it, Tony?
Yes, I did have a question about how many pairs of shoes they wore out. But I did have another thought. It might be interesting for Maverick to know that regular dietary oils are the main cause of most heart problems. And if he sticks with butter and lard and things of that nature, he's much better off. And that's basically all I wanted to say.
That's very good. Very good. So there, butter and lard instead of the hydrogenated oils. Now, with respect to shoes.
I went through 3 pairs on the Pacific Crest Trail and another 3 pairs on the Continental Divide. So I would get roughly 1,000 miles out of each shoe.
How do you know when they're breaking down?
Oh, you can feel it. It's very obvious. They start coming apart at the seams. Mm-hmm. The bottom gets really thin. You start feeling the rocks. And so. And you know when it's time, so you order a few weeks in advance new shoes to be sent to, you know, the next town.
Okay, Brian here is now thinking about hiking the both trails. So where does he start?
To get information?
Yeah, you start with information, right?
Yeah. The Continental Divide, you can go to the CDTA website. That's mm-hmm. the Continental Divide Trail
both trails Association. Both trails have good websites.
Both trails have good websites with good information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best place to start.
What about an app so you can keep track of yourself?
The navigational app that I used on the Continental Divide is called Guthook. And they also have a Gut Hook app for the Pacific Crest Trail and a number of other trails. Mm-hmm. It's a very good idea to have that app. Even if you don't want to use it, just as a backup, you can pull out your phone. You could use that app, which uses GPS. You don't need to have cell service. And you can find out where you are any time of day as long as you have battery in your phone.
As long as you have battery.
Yeah.
Did you still get lost even though you had maps and all the planning? And
a few times I did. And like I said, when I was hiking through the snow, there was no trail finding. It was all just strictly route finding in the San Juans.
Okay. Most important thing with respect to food, your body is craving everything it can get. What are the most important foods for you?
Well, protein. You have to consider that you're breaking down your body every day, and you need those proteins to rebuild, you know, your muscle and your legs, and you know. So that's another very important consideration. I mean,
did you ever shoot a critter and eat it?
I didn't shoot a critter. I almost caught by hand a grouse, which is like a forest chicken.
Did it look really good? Were you seeing it?
It was. I wanted to catch it just to get a picture. I wasn't really interested in eating it for sustenance. But I did fish in the Wind River Range in Wyoming. And that was a good extra, you know, food source because that was my longest stretch.
My greatest fantasy with respect to eating in the wild is a buffalo haunch roasted over an open fire.
Yeah, that's a good fantasy.
Hey, that's a lot of fun. Jared Maverick Perry, Brian Mathias, thank you both for coming in and talking about this incredible adventure. My goodness, too much fun hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, 5,759 miles. Woo! And thank you all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't, especially on the trail. Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.